Welcome everybody for the Friday session. And we are now well prepared to do real stuff. You survived your Lab 4 hurdle, most of you at least. Some of you are still doing it this afternoon. I hope you got something out of it. You got some feedback about where you are in the course. And I'm pretty confident that almost all of us are now on a state where you can start concurrent programming for real. This is what we will actually be doing today. And any further worries or questions about the process, about what we are doing? You got good tutors at least, even if the lecturers are rubbish, but the tutors are actually good. That's good. But you're right, we have definitely good tutors. Good. So let's go into... Kidding. Let's go into the job for today. And I will chase you through a number of different concurrency concepts, and we'll do this in real code. Let's have a look at the program. Ta-da! So it's also on the website. I posted a link to this at the beginning of the lecture already. This is what we will be doing today. Funky program, funky algorithm. It's called pipeline insert sort, sometimes used in high performance environments. But it's not so much important how great the algorithm is or where it's used. It's a beautiful example for us to explore how to implement things concurrently in an easy and straightforward way. And this algorithm gives us plenty of opportunity to be considerate about doing it right and cleanly. Okay, let me give you a bit of an overview of what's going on. We have an unsorted list of elements. Sorting here is done by the color angle, so we want to have elements sorted in this fashion. And the sorting is done in a concurrent way, in a sense that we have a number of parallel nodes. Those are these vertical slices here, those are nodes. And each of these nodes are feeling responsible for a certain range of your data. Which range that is determined when the element comes in. So there are a number of concurrency communication concepts now which we have to go through slowly. Each of these nodes are able to receive data somewhere. This is the input point here. This is like a can imagine like a doorbell. You just come with a new piece of data, ding dong, and the task which is responsible to implement this node has to receive this element and process it further. The task has now a choice between processing it locally, because it feels that this is roughly in the range which I should feel responsible for, or continuing feeding it forward. This is what you see here. So you have this element, which has just been received at the door here. This element is compared to the maximum element, which is in its local array. So if this is smaller than the maximum element, which this node has been handling so far, I will take it and stuff it into a queue for further processing. If this is actually larger than what I'm having at the maximum in my current array, then I forward it to the next node, and the next node is doing the same until you find one node which feels responsible for this element and puts it into its local queue for further sorting. What happens locally? Very simple. Locally, we are just implementing an insert sort, as simple as it gets. And we are communicating with this from this feeder task to the actual insert sort task by means of a queue. Comes in handy. Good thing we already have a queue. and it's all nicely synchronized, so these two can work independently. Important, right? If they are not independent, the whole effect is gone. If this task has to wait until the task here will be ready to do something, that means this thing is completely blocked, not taking any new messages, not forwarding any messages to the next node, and the whole thing is stalled. If I have a queue in here, I'm decoupled. And the decoupling is the important part in concurrent processing in this form that we have here, so that the feeder is putting new elements into the queue and immediately doing the next thing, immediately looking at the next element on the input side, making another decision, forwarding or putting it in the local queue, and taking the next one. So this is very fast. So these elements can run through this chain of feeders here very quickly without any further interruption. There's no processing besides comparing, is it roughly mine? No. Is it roughly mine? No. Is it? Yeah. Take it. Okay. So what happens locally is then actually standard concurrent, standard sequential programming. There is no big surprise here. We have now an insert sort task which takes elements out of this queue and puts it into its local array. Now, insert sort, very simple. You find a spot where it belongs. You tell everybody right from this point to shuffle one to the right. If you have an array, if you have a list, then you just link it into that point. We are a little bit on the performance side, so we're using arrays here. And we're just doing an array shift and put this element right into it. Okay. If this array is full, we have to push one out. The one which we push out is obviously no longer our responsibility, and we will just forward this one to the next node for processing on further nodes. Okay. If this happens, we will also nominate a maximum element and make this maximum element visible to the feeder task up here. Careful, those are two different tasks. So if this maximum element has to be visible for the feeder task, we have to synchronize that too. Make sense? We have done plenty of exercises this week to guarantee that all your access is nicely synchronized. Good example how to do that here. So this is roughly the overall plan. And I would like to point out what are all the concurrent bits and pieces which we now need to implement. We need to implement a number of independent tasks. Those are the feeder tasks and the insert tasks. Okay. Now, this insert task is not quite free-floating. It is actually only accessible to the feeder task, so we can make this insert task local to the feeder task. All right. We'll see whether this is actually making any sense. Then we have a queue to communicate data in a decoupled way between the feeder and the insert task. These bluish elements here indicate that they're synchronized here. So we're not just randomly stuffing it in. We have to actually make sure that these insert and take out points for the queue will be synchronized. We also have a synchronized point to communicate the maximum element to the feeder task, so there need to be synchronization here. And we'll introduce something new, which is message passing, in this case synchronous message passing. We will use that as our metaphorical doorbell into the task to communicate new elements into the feeder task. This will be done by message passing. So we have message passing interfaces here, synchronization points here, here, and here. And that all need to be properly communicated. So will the maximum value for every node be updated? Yes. Every time an element falls out of here, the maximum element will be changing and updated here. For those who already have the mental ability, but this is actually hard, already have the mental ability to foreshadow what is happening here concurrently, they can tell that this maximum element is not necessarily always up to date in the most stringent way. Why? If this array here is completely full, yes, this is the maximum element, and this maximum element is what this task assumes will be its responsibility. But what is not communicated in that process is we already have a number of elements here which may or may not end up in this array. Maybe they are actually just passed through, because by the time they actually make it down here, this is no longer this task's job. So this is a little bit information from the past. But that is fine, because we are on the safe side. If we are a little too conservative, that's fine. We're not missing elements in the process. Even if we would be missing elements in the process, it would not be a big disaster, as long as all of these are independent sorted. Okay, we'll see how this goes in concrete terms. It means you need to already know the third mark. Third mark? What do you mean by third mark? Okay, I wait until a third value. You can instantiate it in different ways. So we could instantiate these nodes by saying we know roughly what the color range here is, and we are dividing the job by default into the first third goes here, the second third goes here, the last third goes here. That's one way of doing it. We will doing it more simplistic. We will just say this one feels responsible for all elements until it flows over, and then we are creating a new node. So we do this completely dynamically. We don't know how many nodes we will need. We just say our node has a certain capacity, and then we create new nodes while we get more elements. This is what we will be doing here. Say we got something bigger than the maximum value, then it will be thrown to the next feeder. Yes, exactly. So this maximum value is the maximum value which is actually the last element in the local array. Okay? It's not the element which is thrown out. It's the last element which is in the local array. These two are two different elements. Okay? I threw one out, put a new one in, shift all to the right, and I have a new last element. Okay? Don't worry about that. This is actually the insert sort problem, not really the concurrency problem, which we will try to solve here. What's the meaning of the forward overflow arrow as opposed to the max element arrow? The max element arrow here, this makes the max element visible to our doorkeeper, to our feeder task. This element here is the one which has been kicked out. We are no longer dealing with that, because our array has been overflowing, and this element which has been kicked out has to be going somewhere else. So we just push it further down the pipeline and have our forward overflow into the next feeder. Does that answer the question? Cool. Okay. That seems to be okay. Classical snake game, yeah. It is a quite funky operation if you imagine that in parallel, and implement all of this in parallel. So there is lots of concurrency here, and we need to find a way to implement that gracefully. Okay? So the maximum element is being physically passed by the feeder, as physical as we can get it in computers. Yes. So it's not that a piece of computer being ripped out and being morphed into something else, but yes, the actual element is being forwarded. What's the situation when the first element insert? Don't understand that question. If you mind a rephrase. Here you have my motherboard, exactly. That's a very physical forward, yeah. Can you please explain why the maximum is not actually what it should be? because of the delays in the processing here. So we have elements which are waiting to be put into this array here, right? And this feeder knows about the maximum element in the current array. But it already, in the last 10 steps, stuffed 5 new elements into its local queue. So it is already likely, not 100% clear, but likely, that this array will overflow further. So the actual max element, once all of these elements have been processed and inserted, will probably this one. But this foreshadowing is not easily possible. So we have to live with a little bit of information from the past. This is often the case that you have to handle information which is somehow from the past. All information which we are processing is from the past without going philosophical, right? And in this case, it is obvious why this is from the past, because there is something which is still to be done, has not yet been done, and we know this will change the state of the max element. Okay? Yo, I think that makes sense. The max element, the old max element will be kicked out. We can already foreshadow that. You see what's coming in here. This guy will go in here someplace and we will kick further elements out. So we can already see that the max element will be changing in near future again. But it's not a big deal, because we are still on the conservative side. We may be feeding a few too many elements through our local array, but it's not a big disaster. Okay? We are on the safe side. It's just we are processing a little bit of information from the past, as always. Okay? Great. I think we have that down so far. Now, how do we get to the actual sorted array in the end? Now, one way of doing that is, not by putting a cursor into my thing, but like that. That at some point, the nodes will realize that this is the end. All elements have been processed, and I'm just reporting my array to some central collector process. Could be my main task, for example. I'm just reporting my local array, stuff it into a queue, and then I tell the next node, okay, end of day, please report your queue as well. And this one will report its result into a result queue. And we have the possibility to just read out everything from a central result queue. Okay, this is the final picture which we want to achieve. Now, as one strategic decision which we need to make, how do we tell this to these individual nodes? And there are two principal ways you can think about how to do that. Either you introduce a second doorbell and say that instead of just feeding new elements in, I have a second point of entry, a second message receiving station for these feeders where I can say end, done, end of line, end of data. But we don't quite know yet how to do that, because that would require that this feeder is able to listen to multiple incoming message streams at the same time. We don't have the mechanics to do that. We'll learn this in a week or so, but we don't have this right now. What we can do instead is something a little bit more simplistic, that we say we have a special element in our input stream, and as the very last element here, I will have a special element which says no element. No? Something which is identifiable as this is not data, this is just a marker for end of file, end of data. If I do that and I see the end of file marker, this end of file marker is being processed through here. This task sees the end of file marker and reports everything to the central queue. Once it has done that, it forwards the end of file marker, and everybody else does the same thing. That's one way of doing that. The gray part insert is the same operation. Okay. Please ask more questions if you're unsure about the algorithm. This isn't easy at all. No, it's not easy at all. There is a lot of concurrency happening here. We have on this screen at the moment 7 concurrent entities, which are all running at the same time and happily in a collective providing a sorting algorithm. This is a lot of concurrency here. Is it possible that some minimum elements in local area are smaller than the maximum element in the neighboring area? No, this is not possible. Mm-hmm. Okay. Ta-da. 7? Ah, 7 concurrent entities. 7 concurrent entities. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You follow me so far, right? Somebody has to listen here. So we need to have some surrounding task, which is actually collecting the results and feeding in the information here. This has to be done by something, and this has to be an additional task. Right? Now, this additional task will be classically your main procedure, but technically, it is still a concurrent entity. Right? Cool. Queues aren't concurrent. What do I mean by that? Which parts seem to be pipelined? Okay, until I wait what the question queues aren't concurrent refers to. Pipelined means that we have the possibility to have a long pipeline of operations here, where this is being fed from one station in the pipeline to the next one. And imagine a supercomputer where you have not 3 of them, but 1,000 of these elements, and all elements are being fed through the pipeline until this works. Yes, okay, if you compare this to a pipeline in a CPU, that's a bit different. So please excuse my metaphor if it doesn't fit 100% what you think by pipeline, but the algorithm is still called pipelined insert sort for the reason of piping it through one node after the other. Okay. The final concatenation is sequential. Yes. The final concatenation here is sequential. So first I get the whole array out of this node. This node is done. And this node indicates to the next node, it's your turn, please report your result. This is reporting the full result and then indicate to the next one, it's your turn now. So this is sequential in the end. That's true. Okay. You meant this one by this queue is not concurrent. This queue is actually sequential by it is only used by one task at a time. Correct. Okay. Questions seem to be settling a little bit. It's not an easy algorithm. It's easy enough that I can do this from a blank editor sheet. And that's the idea, that I can show you concurrent programming without having prepared magic thrown at you, but you will be seeing this from scratch, which is beautiful. So have you all somewhat comprehended what is on this slide? Can we have a flag which points when the arrow overflows? We see this when the array overflows by the max element will actually have a value. I have here an empty frame. This will indicate our not a value state. So the max element may not exist, and it does not exist in the initial state. This array has never been overflown, so we don't have a max element. If we don't have a max element, this array never overflew, then we will take all elements which are coming in until this happens. Until this array is full, it will overflow, we will create a new node, and then we have a max element. Good question. Okay. The queues are the same ones from week 1. Yep. good thing we have done that. So we have plenty of queues. It's just a data structure which is so widespread in concurrent programming, it comes always in handy if you want to have decoupling between processes and not synchronous message passing. The array on the right side of the feeder, when will we use that? The array on the right side of the feeder, you mean this array? This arrow? Okay. Generate more nodes. This will happen once this array is full and this node has the need and urge to get rid of an overflown element, because the overflown element has to go somewhere. This one is feeding it to the next node. This one doesn't have a next node yet. So at this point, we will create a new node dynamically, make a new one, and feed the element to the newly created node. Okay? Where task involved in the queue, so I thought the queue itself was concurrent. The queue itself is not an active element. The queue itself is a passive element, is used by multiple concurrent entities, exactly the way how you have seen the queues implemented by protected objects. Okay. In fact, this is the only piece of software which I will use as given in this task, because the queue you have done to death, and I don't have to reprogram the queue itself. We just take the queue as we have done in week one or week two. The feeders pass through elements come from the unsorted array. Yes, they are not sorted. And they're feeding in here in an unsorted way. And each of the elements has to find the right slot to be sorted into. The three nodes are sequential. No, they're not sequential. So they're sequential in a way that from the perspective of an individual element, so if I have a new element here, is fed into this one, if this feeder is forwarding it, so this element will experience these nodes concurrently, will experience these nodes in sequence. So this will go through this node, through this node, through this node. This is sequential, correct? But all of the nodes are operating in parallel, which means if I have forwarded this element to the next one, I already take the next one. So imagine this more as a lockstep process where you have lots and lots of elements in here. Some of these elements will be pushed down. Some of these elements will go right. But they're all moving at the same time through these pipeline stages. Hence, it is called a pipeline, that you have the first feeder is not waiting for anything beyond that point. It doesn't care. This feeder is forwarding it, done. Look at the next one. Forwarding it, done. Look at the next one. So this is feeding very quickly through the next one. They're all doing that. So all these unsorted elements are rushing through parallel through these nodes. I hope that clarified a little bit. Shouldn't we create enough nodes at the beginning of the algorithm if we know the length of the input collection? Yes, we can do that. I probably would like to do it dynamically for today, but we can also manipulate that easily. By a special token, we'll see how that works, yes. Will the pass the first element to all the feeders afterwards? Will that pass the first data element to all the feeders afterwards? I don't know what you mean by the first data element.
The previous post, which was referring to the top arrow from one feeder to the other. Mm-hmm. Is that going to pass all the data elements, or the first data elements, to all the feeders?
No. It's of course... every feeder has to make a decision whether it will take it out of this pipeline and stuff it into the local queues. So it's not that every element goes through all pipeline elements. one element may do that. But if you have, for example, this dark red element, which is the first, the smallest element which we can sort, this will immediately be diverted into the first node and will stay there forever. Right? If the first feeder gets blocked because its queue is quite full, unless the current queue is overflown, yes. So we have to be careful. The size of this queue may be crucial. Just depending on the speed of this algorithm, we have to note that the feeder here is going to be almost certainly faster than the insert task. This is one of the reasons why we need the queue. So there will be a backlog of drops in that queue for the insert task. The insert task has to take it out and has to do a tiny bit more calculation than the feeder task. It actually has to calculate where it goes, has to shuffle the arrays, etc. So this is slower than this one, which means that this queue has to take up quite a number of elements. Cleverly, you design the size of this queue roughly or a little larger than the number of elements you expect to be waiting here for the insert task at any given time, so that this feeder is not going to be blocked, because that would be bad. If this queue is too short and we always have to wait for this queue to be available again, then this feeder task will be slowing down and everything else will be slowing down, because if that feeder task is no longer accepting new entries because it cannot get rid of the last one, then this is blocked and everything is stalling. Right? Everything is at least delaying until we get one more element out of this queue and into that one. So we have to make sure, good point, the queue has to be large enough to operate as an active buffer, as a buffer which actually decouples the operations here. How would you work out what the size would be? We just relate it to the size of our array. So we assume that there won't be more elements in this queue as we have the possibility to store things away, because we have a max element here. And this max element will determine what we are accepting. So we are only accepting elements which are in that range. So we know roughly how many will be coming here. We will guess that by that information. You can apply other heuristics here. Ultimately, you cannot really know, because unless you know the distribution of your input data, you cannot make an educated call. You just make it usually big enough that in an assumption under random distribution, this will be okay-ish. Okay? So we're going to have live coding today? Yes, of course. But we first have to understand what we are trying to do, right? So I think we are ready. Processor number choice, the input size, and the number of processing elements available. Yes. Let's cross these bridges about the precise dimensions a little later. Let's start by the actual programming job now. So that means I'm getting rid of that. And we are starting with this. Nice empty piece of editor. And we have the QPack protected generic, which takes an element and a size and gives me a queue. This is the only thing that I'm using. Everything else we will actually program. Everything else we will actually program from scratch. Empty blinking cursor as promised. So, oh boy. Now what? Empty blinking cursor. Okay. Let me procrastinate. So far, that was good, right? Now what? What do we need? Well, let's start by making actual procedure. insert sort. And I think we call this thing pipeline insert sort. Okay. Okay, that was easy. Now what? How do you want me to do that? Do you want me to program that top down or bottom up? Do you want me to program the individual small components first and bind them together in the end? Or do you want me to program an overall frame first and fill in the bits and pieces later? So bottom up or top down? Small components first, small components first, small to big, top down. Give me more, top down. So far we have a 50-50 split. Okay, we have a few more for top down, but top down, overall structure first. Bottom up, top down. You seem to be not particularly decided. I think democracy is not working extremely well here. Let me do a mixture of both. Let me go back and forth a little bit. Let me do a little bit of overall structure and then fill in individual bits and pieces. Okay? Can we have a bigger font size? What, for this? This is pretty gigantic. Can make this even bigger. But this will be a little troublesome later because we need to have slightly larger expressions here. So this is as big, one character per screen. Yes, that's a common convention for programming. I'm aware of this. It's a blur in Zoom. We'll wait for a moment to do that. But this is as big as I can make it without actually losing any possibility to do that. So be patient a little bit with your bandwidth. It may take a moment for things to go fine.
Let's program on Google Docs either.
Yeah, or I could do that, true. But not today. Doesn't need to be any bigger than that. Ah, okay, I think so. I will probably make it a little smaller while I'm going along. So that means let's actually do some programming here. Let's define some constants just for framework. Number of nodes. This will be not that one. Number of nodes. This will be a constant. Positive. I have an 8-core. Machine here, let's make it 8 nodes. And we need to define how many elements we want to have. Data stream length is also going to be a constant. Ugh. It's also being a constant. And this is going to be, let's say, 100,000 elements. Okay. Easy. Probably will need a range for these for this data. Not sub range, subtype. Data stream range. It's going to be a positive range 1, 2 data stream length. And I need an element to type to feed into that one. Subtype elements is going to be a positive. And anything doesn't matter. Let's make this from to 99,000. That makes it a lot easier for debugging, because then I can print them in an unformatted way, just dump it on the screen. So now we have to feed in random elements. So the first part will be a bit top-down now. I think the first positive is being misspelled. Yes, it is, actually. Thanks. Then we have, we need to feed in random elements. For that, we can use an ADA package, which already has been predefined by the language, which is ADA numerics discrete random. You don't have to invent these things from scratch, so we use ADA numerics to do that. And that enables me to instantiate a package which says package random element is a new discrete random with, what do we have? We want to have elements from the type element being drawn from that. Done. And now we want to make the operations inside that thing available. So let's use that. Easy. I have to define the generator to draw these elements, which means I call this an element generator. So this is just a little pedestrian sequential programming, what I'm doing here, to give us a little bit of a framework. Okay, easy. So far, so good. Does that actually still compile? None of this is used. Yes. So lots of error messages in terms of none of this is used, but this is fine. We will be using this in a second. Okay, you're still with me here. So the next thing is now, let's go back to a little bit more bottom-up processing. What we need in this algorithm is the definition of these elements, which can be, a no element. So we have to have the ability to feed in elements, but we also need the ability to feed in an end of line marker, a no element, a non-existent, invalid element of some sort. How do you do this in Haskell? What's the type you need in functional functional programming to do that trick? A value can be there, but then it cannot be. You have an additional possibility that you can hand over a non-existent value. Maybe, exactly. Maybe type. Can we have a maybe type? Sure. Why? I'm making a maybe type. Let me quickly make a maybe type for us. That is a maybe type. And maybe type. Save this locally. And a maybe type can be in imperative programming. It's just a variant record, which means a maybe type has a discriminant. Can be valid or not. The valid is a Boolean value. We assume by default this is false. And then we have a record. And the record is a variant record, so we have a case in there, which means case valid is when valid is true. That means we have a value, and the value is of type element. When it's not valid, then it's a null record, nothing there. And case, And record. Done. Hang on, we don't have an element. Okay. Let's introduce an element. So we have a type. Do we need to know anything about this type element? No. Must be able to assign that one. So the element can be simply a private type. Done. For comfort, let me introduce a little function which gives me an invalid value by default. Invalid value. It's going to be a constant maybe type. Remember, a constant is a function without parameters. So it's a maybe constant, and it returns valid as false. This gives me exactly this data structure for an invalid value. How can I create a valid value in this maybe type? Now, this has to take a parameter, so we need to have a function, not a constant. A valid value, assuming we have a type element, returns a maybe. And this is now valid will be true, and the value will be assigned to E. Okay, done. Okay, can I make this break this in the next line? It actually works. So that was the quick imperative version of a maybe type. Do not confuse this with C programming, where you have similar looking structure. This is an actual type safe variant record. Ada will give you runtime errors if you use that wrongly. If you have an invalid value and you try to read the value out of this one, you will get an error message. And that's the point. So you can identify, is there a value there? If there is a value there, then I can extract this. Otherwise, I cannot. Okay. So this is much more type safe than what you would do by just having a record which has a Boolean and an element in that. Bad. That's much better. Does it actually work what I'm doing here? Okay, that worked. Any questions on that? When do we use a record? Was using maybe types part of our plan? Yep, it's part of the plan. Part of the plan of having the ability to feed in an invalid value to tell everybody to close shop. That was the idea, right? So that means I can now instantiate that. Let me instantiate the maybe type. How do we do that the cleverest? First I have to import that, otherwise I'm not going very far with that. So import the maybe type. I cannot use it because it's a generic package, right? And I can make a new package, which is a package maybe element. Type. This is a new maybe. And element will be our element. Okay, use that. Maybe element type. And I will be introducing a shortcut straight away to make it a little bit more writable. So I want to have a type which I call maybe element. And the maybe element is actually the same as maybe element type maybe. It just saves me typing. It's just a shortcut. easy. So what do we want to define now in a concurrent way? If I can point if invalid, so maybe. Okay. We could use just an invalid definition of scalar types. The point here is I want to be a little bit more universal. You cannot assume that every type in Ada can have an invalid. For example, if I define this as integer, I cannot have an invalid value. If I have a complex type, a complex record, a complex structure of things, I cannot have necessarily an invalid value. So invalid values work for basic scalar types, for some basic scalar types, but not for everything. So for general purposes, I would need a maybe type that works for everything. Okay. This is used to pass elements through the feeders. Yes, exactly. Good. Okay, let's do what we're actually here to do, namely defining some concurrent entities. Okay, type node. This is a task, right? Okay, let's make this a task type. Task type node. Task type node is having a possibility to communicate, so it has an entry. This entry point is called feed. And we can feed in a maybe element. That's all we need. End of story. End note. Done. Ah, there's an is missing, hence the indentation goes all haywire here. Done. So we have a note. And put can allocate a new one. So let's introduce an initial node now. Initial node. This initial node is just of type node. You just start with something. Let me know if you want to have it smaller, if you lose overview, because we only see a very small window here. So let me feed elements into that so that we have possibility to test our whole thing. Just put up something on the screen to indicate that we are starting here. Feeding in a number of elements. We have data stream length. Data stream length. And you want to have random elements. Probably have to do this now in multiple lines to get this on the screen, like that. Okay. Just a message. Let me reset the random generator. Element generator. Fine. And now I can put these elements in. How do I do that? For I in data stream length. No, data stream length, data stream range. We already defined a range for that. For I in data stream range. Now this is a sequential loop. We feed in into the initial node dot feed. And we are feeding in valid value. Valid value of a random element random of our element generator. So I think that should be doing it. We have enough parentheses. We should have. And loop done. And to indicate to this node that we are done, let's feed in the last one. How do we do that? Well, same thing, say the initial node dot feed, and we feed in invalid value. Done. So we haven't collected anything, but what we have done now is we are feeding in all these elements already. Let me see how that goes. Let me just compile that. Missing full declaration of node. Indeed. We said there will be a task type, but we didn't say anything else. And we kind of missed ada.txio. Let's put that in there as well. And let's actually put that in the right spot. ada.txio. Be a bit OCD about these things. Goodie. So what we now need to do is to actually create a node. Task type node is good, but we actually have to put some code to that. So that means we say task body node. Is begin end node. And what do you need to do to get this done? Let me just check whether you are still all here. A reminder of the beginning of the message would be very useful, of course. That was the welcome message which we had at the beginning to the link for the PDF file. If you want to have this on the side on your screen someplace. So, now we need to implement the first concurrent entity here, the task body node. Remember what it has to do. Task body node is taking in an entry feed. Just have a look. Takes in an entry feed. We'll compare this with a maximum element and either stuff it locally or forward it further. Okay? Okay. Let me see whether I can program that. So we have our task body node, and this will do something in a loop. And it will accept data from the synchronous message passing interface feed. Accept feed. E will be of type maybe element. And we should make a local copy of that so that we can further program on that. Candidate, just make a copy of that. And I end this synchronous message passing interface right here. So I'm immediately free to accept something else when I'm coming back to that. So now I need to make a decision if pass to next node, not yet defined what that is, but we will need a function for that, based on the candidate. Then we will need to pass on something to the next node. Next. Dot all dot feed candidate. If we are not passing it on, that means we are putting it into a local queue. Queue dot nq of our candidate. And we are exiting the whole operation. If our candidate is no longer valid, exit when not candidate. Valid. This is all the code which we need for the feeder task. Okay. We have to fill in a few details now to get this done, but I think that should be pretty much it. Okay. What do we need? We need pass on to next node. We need to have some information about the next node, and we need to have something about putting something in a local queue. Okay. For that, I would need to implement a little bit more data structures at this point. We need next. Next will be a pointer to the next node. Let's call this node access. Node access, and we are initializing this to a null pointer because initially there is no next stage. We don't have a node access yet. We need to have a definition for this pointer type. Let me just introduce that. So we need a we need to have a type node to start, a type node which we can have an access for. So type node access. Will be an access all of this specific node. Okay. This is a pointer, a reference to a potentially next node. Okay, that's it. In order to create a new one, we will have need a function for that a little later on. But in order to do it safely so that we can access the next one without falling into a null pointer, we should probably have a function for that to access the next node. Let me do this straight away. Access the next node returns a node access. This is a function which is not an expression function. This will have a begin-end bracket to it. Access next. And inside of that, we have to find out if the next pointer is actually currently null. Next pointer is null. Then we need to create a new one. Let's make a new node. And return next. What does that do? I have now a function which enables me to always access the next node, whether it exists already or not. If it doesn't exist yet, I will create a new one. That makes things a little easier. So now I have the possibility to access the next one by creating a new one if in case it doesn't exist yet. All fully automated. And what I need to do now is simply to, instead of saying next dot all, I just say now I want to have access next. And I will automatically create a new node in case this node doesn't exist yet. Cool, done. So we need still a queue, right? So that queue has not been defined, and we need to have a pass to next node. Any ambiguation of the two nodes? Elaborate a little bit. Ambiguation of the two nodes. Which two nodes? We have the definition of task node, and we can access a new one by saying next, and the next will automatically be created if it doesn't exist yet. Okay?
I think the question might be that we declare a node as a type, and then we declare as a task type on the line after.
Ah, okay, that's a good point. That's the reason why I do this is called a forward declaration. In strict Algol-style languages, and Ada definitely qualifies as strict, you can never use something which has not yet defined. And for that, you sometimes you need to do that because you have recursive data definitions, right? You have a list which has a link to itself, a reference to itself. And the trick in Algol-style languages to do that is to have an unspecified forward declaration that said, there will be a type node. I don't know what the type node is, but I will be able to have a reference to that thing, whatever it is. So I can define now a type node, access, which is an access all to node. And I need to define this before the actual task because I need to have this in here. Otherwise, I would not be able to define that before the full node has been specified. So I need to have this one. Okay. So far. So let me introduce the other aspects now, namely pass to next node and the QNQ. QNQ, let me do that first because that's the rather simple part. For that, we need to introduce our queues. So that's not the maybe type. That's with QPack protected generic. Easy. And now I can produce a new queue on that. Do this after I defined all of that. Let me know if you want to have this smaller because I think it's actually very hard to follow with these pinhole kind of size fonts here. We need a queue for that. So I have a package which gives me a maybe element queue, because we have to be able to hold maybe element queue to hold maybe elements in there. This is a new QPack protected generic with a bunch of parameters. Sorry, let me get these parameters. The element will be a maybe element. And the size will be, let's call this node size. Don't know what that will be. Anyway, I have to break this onto the next line to actually make that readable at all. Okay. And then we can use that one. Use maybe element queue. Done. And I can define a new queue. Is maybe element queue dot protected queue. Okay, done. We have to define the node size. Node size will probably be defined by how many elements we have in the stream and how many nodes we will define here. Be a constant positive. How do you do this? You have data stream length divided by number of nodes. But you want to actually round this up, right? So that if it actually doesn't divide nicely, you still have enough elements, enough space in your arrays to actually get them all in. So you want to round that up. How do you do that nicely? The easy way to do integer rounding is by get this down by one, do the division, and then add one again. Okay, let me get this on the next line that you can actually read that. Done. The number of nodes was dynamic. The number of nodes is dynamic, but we need to have an initial guess how many elements do we, how many nodes do we roughly want to create, so that we have an idea how large the local arrays should be. We need to have some estimate for the local array size. Okay. Ah, like a linked list definition, yeah. That's a good example. Beautiful. So we have now the possibility for that. And we need to have pass to next node. We have not defined that. So function pass to next node. When do we want to pass on to the next node? Is of type element. No, it's not of type element. It's of type maybe element. Type maybe element, which will return a boolean. And is defined as follows. We'll pass it on to the next node under a number of cases. A, it has to be valid. Otherwise, we are never passing it on. It has to be valid, and then the max element has to be... No, sorry, our element has to be larger, the value has to be larger or equal to our current max element so that we are forwarding it further. We don't have a max element yet, right? Okay, let's make a max element. Let me try something. Max element, we want to have this access to max element atomic, right? Okay. So maybe element. And I can ask Ada to do this atomically. Let me try that with atomic. Wee, cool. So does that compile? Does that actually work? How far are we with our coding massacre so far? Dun, 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 dun. Function access next. Subtype has no previous spec. I think I can live with that for the moment. New node is undefined. Ah, okay. We need to define a function new node to create a new one. How do we do that? Function new node. Turn node access is a new node. Okay, done. Access is fine. This doesn't work because max element is actually also a maybe type, which means we have to use the value of this one as well, assuming that max element is actually valid at this point. Let me get rid of this style warning for a moment. This is... just bear with me for a second. Check for separate specs. I don't want this today, so let me get rid of that. So let me try that again. This is an info information which I don't really want. Candidate is undefined. Yes, we still need a candidate. Okay. Candidate is of type maybe element, obviously. And defined as an invalid value. Let me get rid of these info messages as well. This is, I think, a few too many warnings active here. Where was this? Sorry, just bear with me for a moment. Okay, I'm not really finding that at the moment, so I'll hang in there for a second. Okay, let's ignore these info messages for a moment. Candidate is undefined. Let's keep going. Max element is read but never assigned. Ah, but here we're getting the error message which I wanted to provoke. Goody. The error message which we need here is atomic access to max element. You cannot read that because that's definitely too small for Zoom here, but so I read it out for you. The error message which I get, right here, is atomic access to max element cannot be guaranteed. And that makes sense because max element is actually not word sized or not necessarily word sized, so we don't know that. The element can be beyond what ADA can guarantee for that one. It tells you this is not guaranteed to be atomic. So we need to do this in some other way. We actually need to protect this actively. We need to use a protected object to do that. Okay. So that was a nice try, but it doesn't work as such. We still need to get this done in a nice protected way. How do we protect something nice and easy? Not a big deal. Let's quickly make something which actually will be able to protect our max element.
Yeah. Yeah, good question. What's there was one in the chat. What's the difference between with atomic as opposed to pragma atomic in ADA?
With atomic is specific to, actually there is no difference. It's just a syntactical difference. The old style was writing it as pragmas. Since 2012, so that's quite a while ago, since 2012 we are writing this with attributes, which means we have a with statement. ADA will recognize both syntaxes. So then I have a package synchronize any type. Let me quickly do that. Quickly synchronize whatever comes in. And obviously we need to have a little protected for that. So a little protected type. It's called a simply protect. Is procedure write with an element and function read, which will return an element. And private to that, we have then an actual value of type element. And will be assigned to default value. That's all we need, and protect. So we use a number of definitions here, which we will need to define as parameters for this package. Let's define the parameters for that. Again, we have a type element, which is private. Don't need to know anything about it. And we have a default element, which is of type element. Easy peasy. Does that compile? Now this gives me simple protection for everything. Still have these info error messages, which are to be ignored at the moment. And I can simply create, create a body for that. Let's ask ADA to generate a body for me. Let's get rid of these slightly excessive comments. I just asked my IDE to produce an automatic frame for that. And obviously we want to have not an error message, but actually code. So how do these functions look like? Trivial. If you write something, we just assign it to the local value. That means value will be E. And for this function here, we just say the return value is value and done. Don't need an actual body for this function. This can be done directly here. Okay. Does that compile? Yep, that doesn't have any issues. Which means I can actually use that. We have now a synchronized type. Let's just use that synchronized type. Let's go back to that. Sync type. And what I can do now is I have my element, which I can define as a synchronized maybe element, not just as an atomic, which actually doesn't work. So let's comment that out. Don't need this max element defined like that. We need to define the max elements properly. Properly means it's protected. And that means we have a package which is synchronized maybe element. Synchronized maybe element. This is a new sync type with our element is now maybe element. And the default value shall be an invalid value. And now I define the max element not as a maybe element with atomic, but I define the max element as a synchronized maybe element. Synchronized maybe element protect. Easy. Which means I can now do this correctly. I can say pass the next value if the value which I received is valid. And then my max element dot read this one is also valid, and if both of them are valid and the value which I received is larger than the max element read out from the protected value, then I will forward to the next task. Okay, so that was all the pedestrian part. And we are actually all good. Yep, we are all good. Bunch of warnings which I will address next time. And we are now at a state where we can feed in our tasks to a local queue. And we can feed in random elements, we can feed in maybe elements. They're accepted here. This is the interesting part of concurrency, what we have done today. We are accepting a new element, making a local copy of that. And if this is to be passed to the next node, we are either passing it on or creating a new node and passing it on, just like that. Or we stuff it into the local queue for local processing. What's missing? The main part, which we will need to do now for Monday. This queue is now being filled with elements this node feels responsible for, but nobody is ever taking anything out of that one. So the part which we will now need to do is to program this task, which takes elements out of this queue, puts it in a local array, and on occasion forwards something to the next node. Okay, that's the last thing which is still required to do. Otherwise, we have already a pretty neat framework. We have queues. We have protected this one. We have protected this queue. We have a synchronized interface here. We just need to program the concurrent entity to actually insert these elements into the local array. So it is honestly actually hard to program with these tiny windows here that I don't really see much of the code and only see these pinhole views, is that you notice I sneakily actually reduced the font size a little bit to not lose complete overview on this tiny page here. Is that working for most of you on your Zoom interfaces, or is this just simply too blurry to read? Readable right now. Okay. Well, full screen, of course, you have to blow it up on your screen that you can get as much detail out of that one as well. That's a relief. So if you can actually read that, then we are in business. Then we can do the rest of it. Because then I will stay on that size, and next time you will actually see a lot more overview in your code. At this time, do you have any further questions about the job at hand and the code we have done?
So there's a question earlier by Harry.
Yeah.
It's about the two calls of maxElement.read,
yeah,
if statements or the function.
Couldn't it possibly be changed between the element valid and the element read value? Great observation. Thanks for that. Where do we have that? It's the pass function here. So we have, we are reading out maxElement.valid. This is one call to the protected object, and then we are dropping access to the protected object, and we are reading out the value to this one. Correct. But algorithmically, we know that this is not a problem, because we will never set the maxElement back to invalid. So we'll only set the max element to valid at some point. After that, it will stay valid. It may actually be the case that between reading that and accessing the read value, the actual max element value can have changed, but it will not change to invalid anymore. So excellent point. Thanks for that. Not a problem in the context of this algorithm. In general, it would be a problem. Is it fine because it's concurrent access with other functions? It doesn't really help you because you can have the situation that this one is reading the max element read. The non-existent insert sort task could actually use max element write between this one and this one. Right? So it could actually change the value after I have read this one and read this one. But as we said, the valid flag is not going to be taken back ever in this algorithm. So in this specific context, it fulfills exactly what we need. We have the synchronization, but we don't have the possibility to read this out. How would you do this if you want to be sure that you're actually reading a valid element, even under circumstances that the valid flag could go down? How would you program that to make it safe? Read and assign to a variable and then check against that. Exactly. Should we do that? So in order to make that even better, I'm now actually need to have a body to this function. Just makes it a bit uglier, right? Which means I have a max element, which is a maybe type. Maybe element, and I assign this to max element dot read, and then I can reformulate that differently. I can now say return. This one here again, but in this case we will now use the local copy of it. Max element is valid, and max element has actually a value to that, and we are not using this anymore. Okay. Agreed. Does that solve the problem? Probably need to have a semicolon there. Okay. No errors, that should all be fine. Do we have a guarantee that the compiler won't change it back to what it was? Yes, we do. If I make a local copy, Ada has an understanding that this needs to be an actual copy of that. You cannot put this back into functional terms again. So that's one of the obvious advantages and reasons why we're using a concurrent programming language. The compiler optimizations, which otherwise would actually possibly ruin what you have just done and just take it back into the previous syntax. Sorry, let me just get it back on the screen. Would it possibly put it back into the previous syntax? Then that would be barred. Okay. Oh, we don't have any read for that. Sorry, actually made a syntax error there. Makes it a lot easier because we already have the value. So, and read. Ah, could be declared a constant, obviously. My bad, let's make this a constant. And now we should be good. And now we're good. Okay. So if I say constant here, I mean it, and Ada will honor that. It's not going to take this back. Cool. I think we are running a little over time here. But it's a good point to transition this into next week completion of this one, that we will make this into the complete concurrent program, which implements the rest of it. We're almost done. The only thing which is missing is the actual insert sort task here. We have now everything else in place. Okay, any questions left on what we have been doing here? Was it too fast? Too slow? Speed was okay-ish. Could we have the code file? Sure. You want to have this semi-compiled thing? I can give you that semi-compile thing that you can play with that one already. Or I can... too fast if the code would be acceptable. Okay. I will just publish it as is at the moment. Keep in mind, this is an intermediate stage. We have to still make this whole thing go. Okay, but definitely feel free to compile it on your own machine and play around with that further. And of course you can complete it yourself. Perfect. Done. We don't have to do it on Monday then. You can complete it just all by yourself. Great. Thanks for the suggestion. We can do other stuff then on Monday. Kidding. Of course we are completing this on Monday. Okay. So, get all of that. I was exhausting to get through all of that. And, you can copy the chat log now if you want to have the questions here. We are not actually storing the chat log questions here. Was answering them mostly live. So take a copy of that before just save chat. Taking a copy of that as well, just for safety. Okay, anything else? Void before enjoying snow on the weekend. I hope you're all tucked in cuddly for even colder temperatures. And hopefully, finally, some relief and sunshine on Sunday. Otherwise, enjoy your week and I see you all back fresh and having everything completed, which we saw on the screen today, by Monday. Whew. Thanks, guys. See you Monday. Cheers. Thanks.